Okay, so on the spirit of Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Do you know my wife's huge into Harry Potter, right?
Is she? Like, big.
We've watched all, how many videos are there?
Eight. Cheryl's like, there's eight.
We just finished the eighth one, which is the Fantastic Beasts or whatever series. Yeah. But that's a holiday tradition in the Nat household.
Wow. Okay.
Rewatching them.
Along with Christmas Vacation.
Just watched it last night.
Did you watch it last night?
Yeah, last night to start it off. Uh-huh. Normally we do it on Thanksgiving because it kind of kicks off and then you go into it. But we were a couple days behind. Watched it last night. Did like crafts with the kids and stuff like that. But I mean, I've been watching that movie for 20 years. I mean, it's just, it never gets old.
Real quick, that your favorite holiday movie? Name one. Top first one that comes.
For me, it is. But there's a couple. You know, like, I like The Christmas Story, but they always, you know, you get 24 hours of that on Christmas, right?
Sure. Craig?
Christmas Vacation.
That's yours?
Although Elf is really good, but I've never seen it.
You haven't seen Elf?
You better run Elf.
How have you not seen Elf?
The guy that looks like Will Ferrell has never seen Elf.
Oh, my God. You look way better than Will Ferrell.
Yeah. You look way better. That's funny. Zach, our branch manager, that's like his gig.
He's got a whole elf outfit.
Okay. That's hilarious.
I would have to say Elf is
Give it a run this year, Craig, right. to see what it's like.
I think it's being re-released in theaters too.
So. Is it? Sweet. Mm-hmm. How about the Hallmark? Do you guys have to sit there and hear the Hallmark?
There's a lot of those.
The storyline's all the same.
100%.
We're about to close down the Christmas tree lot for the night. Oh, my car broke down the road. And then they start dating, and then the town needs to be saved. Like, it's the same thing every Hallmark Christmas movie. It's like Gone for Christmas, Home for, like, all the titles are like so 100%. I have no idea how to tie that into our episode today.
Well, you know, Christmas is about mystery, and sometimes it's a mystery. What an appraiser does or what an appraisal is, and actually talking to an appraiser is a mystery, and we have one in the studio.
In the spirit of Christmas and home sweet home, we are talking about appraisals today, folks. Yeah. So you are either watching or listening to
MLO.
And we got a special guest today, guys. Not only a real estate agent, but an appraiser.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Craig Black. Craig. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, welcome to the show, Craig.
I've been admiring this for years.
You've been on the show, but it was during the pandemic lockdown when our studio was shut down. We had to do a Zoom, we were saying that was probably one of our best Zooms during that lockdown.
Absolutely. People forget, though, like, we've been doing this since COVID.
Before
COVID, from our homes.
It's been a long time.
Different times, yeah.
And we are already going to give Craig the gold star for most prepared because we put together a little agenda and then he countered back with notes on the agenda. So we've really got a nice one to go through. So hang in there today, guys. You are going to pick up multiple nuggets of knowledge. So if you're buying or selling, this pertains to you. This is really, really big. You need to understand what an appraisal is, which we're going to go through.
Yes, sir.
What to know if you're a buyer, how it's going to be different on the loan program that you've chosen or Casey and I have chosen for you. What else?
Also, I mean, if you're a real estate agent, you're a listing agent, a buyer's agent, if you're a lender, like, this is the one person that, you know, we rarely get to talk to.
Very rare.
So this is going to be your time to actually hear these questions that you might have during this loan process or when you're selling or buying a home. You're like, well, why did the appraiser choose this? Or why did that get called out? Or how did this get ordered? What's the time? Like, listen to these answers that we're about to get because we got a unicorn in the studio and it's about to get rocking.
I would also say for the people that are planning to refinance, because a lot of people got into higher than normal interest rates over the last 18 months.
Yes,
and a lot of their strategy was like, oh, I did a seller paid buy down and then I'm going to refinance prior to like my full payment coming into effect.
Good point.
And you will likely need to have an appraisal done to execute that refinance. So a long-winded way to say, hang in there, guys, because I know a lot of the people, they like watch or listen to the first couple minutes like, that doesn't pertain to me, on to the next, but you're gonna get some good takeaways. So Craig, this is your opportunity to kind of introduce yourself, give us who you are, what you do, how long you've been doing it, lay the ground, our typical TEDx intro here.
Yeah.
As he got wrote in, who is this knucklehead? I'm misspelled knucklehead. That's great. Let's see. So I started in commercial real estate appraisal right out of college in Raleigh, North Carolina. I think my first actual appraisal that I did was a $50 million office building.
Oh my God.
So coming in hot.
Thrown into the wolves right away. And then was there for 3 years as an assistant, moved out here to work for a commercial appraisal firm downtown for probably 4 or 5 years. And then just went out on my own and started doing apartments mostly.
Okay.
And then got to meeting more residential loan officers and they're like, why don't you do residential?
Residential,
and
yeah.
And I was like, well, why don't I? And that was at a time where there was more work than you could handle.
Yeah.
And you could also market yourself to the loan officers.
So, there you go.
Appraiser for a little over 25 years, and I got my real estate license in 2012. So
yeah.
I've been a realtor for 12 years, too.
Yeah, I think it's a big deal, too, because, like, you get to see it from both angles. Like, you're professionally involved on both angles, not only appraising homes. Mm-hmm. You get a, if you're not wearing that hat, you're on your real estate hat, so you're selling, buying homes, all that stuff. It's great.
Yeah, and the nice thing is, as an appraiser, I get to look at all sorts of purchase and sale contracts.
Yeah.
So I think it should make me a little more knowledgeable when it comes to advising somebody on where we need to be to list their home or what we should pay for something. So I get access, more access than maybe most realtors would. So
it's, yeah, that's it's a benefit. Fantastic. Absolutely.
And this is commonly talked about, at least with Casey and I's position being the loan originator with the agents, the appraised value is always something considered. Even prior to putting in an offer on a home, there's a lot of kind of maybe amateur appraising going on from the buyer's agent being like, well, these are the comparable homes. Remember that. That's something we're going to cover. And this is what I think we should offer. So let's start with what is an appraisal in short, because I think there's some really important distinctions that need to be made in the process. And there might be buyers and sellers who thought an appraisal was something and it might not. So Craig. Mm.
Yeah, very often it's confused with the home inspection.
Right.
You know, and
great
we,
point.
We appraisers call it an inspection too, so that it can be confusing for
crosswind going on.
Yeah, like what's happening here? So I actually wrote down directly from the Uniform Standards of Professional Appraisal Practice what an appraisal is, because my recall in my 50
Webster
years
dictionary
is not as good.
Sources are cited.
It's an appraisal is the act or process of developing an opinion of value. That's the noun version of it. And then of or pertaining to appraising and related functions such as appraisal practice or appraisal service. So that's the adjective. So an appraisal is numerically expressed as a specific amount, as a range of numbers, or as a relationship to a previous value opinion or numerical benchmark, such as assessed value or collateral value. So
distilling that down.
Yes.
We're having to send a professional out to the house to ensure that the value of the home is in line with the negotiated sales price of the property.
Correct. The appraisal has to be equal to or greater than the contract price.
Nothing to do with the inspection report, guys. So buyers, this is something that's important, Craig was, and I think we should dive into it because it's money out of your pocket and something to budget for. So when you do get an accepted offer, your buyer agent is like, we're going to do a home inspection. We fully endorse that and you absolutely should. So that's going to be the show me the Carfax, guys. They're going to have someone go into the home, go under the house, right?
Yep.
The crawl spaces, the attic. They're going to look at the roof. They're going to look at the appliances. They're going to really dig into it. Do you want to elaborate on
that? Yeah, I mean, like I always like to preach it, you know, is the DNA of the home, right? It's going to tell you everything you need to know about that home, you know. And, you know, sometimes it can expose, you know, things, problems, issues on the home. Sometimes it can tell you, you know, the home's been maintained great, you know, and, you know, here's a couple little knickknacks you might want to just be aware of, or maybe, you know, that AC unit in 5 years, just need to make sure, you know.
These reports are like crazy detailed. It's a full maintenance list.
Yeah, and it's important. Like me and Addie always encourage that home inspection just because this is one of the biggest purchases of your life, you know, and these homes, you know, are all different ages. You might be buying a 70s, 80s, 90s, brand new home. It doesn't really matter the year of the home. That home inspection is important because, you know, even if it's brand new or someone's lived in there, It's still a home built by other people, other hands involved. You want to make sure that there's no issues.
Yeah.
So then the difference too, you as a buyer are going to hire that inspector to come in and get your maintenance report, know what's good and bad about the home, right? I was, to summarize what Casey just said really well there, I like to look at it as your 5 to 10 year maintenance plan. Mm-hmm. So what's been deferred, what's coming up, and what needs urgent attention, right? The appraisal is something totally different. The mortgage company, the bank or the lender, whatever you call it, is actually going to order that through a third party company, typically an appraisal management company. And they need this appraisal report to justify the value of the financing and the purchase price of the home. So it protects you as well in some sense.
Yep.
But Craig, give us some, from your point of view, real quick, like what are the key like elements of an appraisal comparatively to a home inspection report? Big difference. You both go to the home.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But what are you doing differently than someone that's doing an inspection report?
Well, I always, you know, when I have my realtor hat on, I always explain to a buyer or seller, like, not only do you have to qualify as a borrower, the property has to qualify in the way of the appraisal. You know, so
I'm taking.
We're done.
There you go. There's a little nugget for you. Normally I'll get an appraisal request. I'll take a look at it. If it's a purchase, I'll be provided with the sales contract. I'll look at the listing to see, you know, what it encompasses. Typically, from there, I'll make the appointment with either the listing agent or buyer's agent, whoever the property contact is that's provided by the lender. Do a little research from the desk, pull comps. Very often, sometimes the agents will reach out to see if they can provide some additional comparable details for me that I may not be aware of. I mean, because really, you know, they've spent who knows how long getting this property ready for market. They have all the feedback from the showings. I mean, they know this property intimately. So why wouldn't I accept their information? I'm showing up for 30, 40 minutes. I don't have the history of how this property was marketed, the number of showings, how many offers were received. So I usually pull 4 or 5 comps that are hopefully in the same neighborhood, same school district, try to bracket the gross living area, because that's what an underwriter wants to see. An appraisal is not an exact science. So
how do you, just put a little pause, a comp is a comparable. So get used to knowing that mm-hmm. comp. What qualifies, how as an appraiser do you determine what a qualifying comp is? Because everyone and their mom who owns a home is like, well, this house down the road $100,000 more than what I'm selling it for, and the details and the characteristics of that property are not comparable. So for example, like you might have a 3-2 and then you think that the 5-3 five bedroom three bath is a comparable sale. Would that work or not?
Well, what I try to do is put myself in the eyes of a buyer.
Okay.
Like, what properties are going to simultaneously compete for this property that I'm appraising?
Mm-hmm.
So when I go and I pull, and let's say it's a ranch home in Beaverton.
Right.
Where there's hundreds of comps. Well, hopefully the 4 or 5 that I pick are all in the same neighborhood. Hopefully I'm going to have a few that, you know, one that brackets the low end, one that brackets the high end of the gross living area. But again, it's all school district too is an important piece.
Mm. Oh, nice.
But, you know, honestly, it's just, hey, is this home going to compete for a similar buyer?
Right.
And, you know, very often there's homes that are so unique that you just can't see, you know, can't have that same vision. But, you know, usually we want to have comps that are within the last 3 months.
3 months, okay.
Maybe even 6 months if it's in an area, you know, where there hasn't been a lot of transactions, you know, where the last few years we've had low inventory. So,
absolutely.
You know, that's kind of at least how I look at it.
What about distance?
Yeah.
Because you said neighborhood.
Distance can be tricky. I mean, very often the lender or underwriter will allow you to go beyond the typical mile radius. That's sort of
one mile
rule
of thumb. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, if it's in a suburban neighborhood and it's, you know, it's a homogenous neighborhood, if it's, you know, kind of a cookie cutter home, they really want those comps within a mile.
Gotcha.
But if it's a unique home, say in like Oswego on the lake or in Portland Heights, where there's not a lot of transactions and all the homes are super different, then of course there's some latitude with distance and, you know, how far out you can go and even date of sale. and how long or how far back you can go in time. What are those comps to?
Yeah, I think that's important because like with that neighbor talk, like you always hear, it's like, well, it's not a comparable sale if that house that you're like, well, the neighbor sold their house 5 years ago for X amount of dollars and now we're selling now, like, you know, the market's changed in 5 years.
Great point.
You know, so that timing, I think, is important for people to know. You know, those comparables, like Craig just said, you know, 3 months is a good range. If it needs to go to maybe 6 months because we, you know, haven't had that many sales going on. But then you talk about distance, like for that suburban neighborhood, we're trying to stay in that neighborhood, that 1 mile square radius. But if you own the home out in Banks, you know, it's kind of more of rural areas and stuff. You're not going to have the 1 mile, you know, radius. You might have to go farther out, right? So yeah, it definitely, you know, it's important to know for that comparable part of it.
Yeah, if you've got a home, for instance, it's in Banks, it's on acreage and it's unique, I mean, you're really going to have to stretch to find five or six comps that are going to work.
Yeah, and I think the important detail is it's a comparable home, guys. So you need to understand, like, you're looking for other homes that are very similar to yours and what they sold for to, one, assure that we're getting the right value.
Yeah, I like the takeaway of the last three to six months, hopefully less than a mile. And two, especially with a lot of like the planned urban developments, you can't look at a different neighborhood that isn't within your community and try to inflate your value or justify it. Like,
yeah, I mean, switch
a lot of people do that.
Switch it over to like a car, right? Like the Honda isn't going to sell the same as the Mercedes.
Right.
Well, also, too, right now, particularly, we're in sort of a fluctuating market. And now some of my other appraisal compadres are like, are you checking the declining box? And it's pretty darn close. If
in
it's
some
not
markets,
in some in some areas of town, things aren't declining.
Good point.
What are some things that, because then I'm looking at it from the buyers or even the sellers, I hear a lot of sellers, well, we've done a lot of work on the home. Now, define work. That might be a dedicated 2-year weekly trip to Home Goods with heavy themed decor.
Yeah.
And they like it might be all fancy wancy, right? It might look all West Elmy in there. Or some people might have actually done a true kitchen remodel or added a basement something. Craig, what specific things? And we could talk, I'm likely, for an hour, but what does and does not help the value of the home?
Well, I think most people would agree kitchen and baths are what sells homes, you know, so that's what we, at least I key in on the most. And then to also make sure that since their purchase or acquisition, what did they update that was deferred maintenance versus what is an actual update?
There's the one.
They may have bought a home that had a roof that was at the end of its life.
Right.
Had 3 to 5 years remaining. Well, they put a new roof on. Well, okay.
It needed it.
It needed it.
It's like tires on a car.
So it's probably not going to be, if you spent 25 grand on a roof, you're probably not going to, cost isn't going to equal value on that.
Great point. That's a great point.
Had to be done.
Yep.
Kitchen and baths, you know, just general updates throughout. I mean, landscape, curb appeal, you know, decks and patios.
Is there like a maximum in what's the right word? Inflation?
Well, maximum like improvement. Like if you.
Yeah, max improvement evaluation.
If you go put 200 grand into a $300,000 house, you know?
Right. Well, I guess it depends on price point too.
Let's like use 500.
Yeah, 500. If you're looking at a $500,000 home and somebody has put $150,000 into it. Well, you want to be careful that's not an over improvement for the neighborhood.
Here we go. Over improvement.
So,
Casey and I are picking up on our personal little things we can say to our clients.
Finance guys over here, not English guys.
I try to always ask, particularly if it's a refinance appraisal, what updates have been done since they've purchased the property, whether it's window coverings, whether it's a roof, whether it's paving, landscape. I jot all that down.
Yeah.
Because very often, if I'm doing a refinance appraisal that was 2 years or less than 2 years after their purchase, and there's a pretty significant increase in value, the underwriter is going to want to know what's transpired. And so if I have that list of information and they require, you know, additional dialogue after the appraisal's been delivered, I can quickly write that up. And I try to put it in the report too. Sometimes I get in a bit of a hurry and kind of forget to add those things.
Sure.
But, you know, that can give a little, I call it underwriter heartburn. when they see a significant increase in value over a short period of time. They want to know what's happened.
Yeah, that's a great point. It really is. Yeah. And I mean, there's a lot of details going on in this, guys. It's a home, right? I mean, if you own a home right now, you understand how much involvement in there. They're not, an appraisal isn't going to note every single tiny little detail on there, you know, so. Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to, let's remind everyone, we're going through the process of how the home is appraised. So I want to also ask Craig, what hurts an appraisal the most based on your experience? I think this is good for sellers to know. Right. This is good for buyers to know. What are things that would negatively impact the evaluation and potentially jeopardize if the home has enough value to close on the
tune in here, listing agents and sellers.
Health and safety issues. That's the biggest hurdle. You know, whether there's unfinished products or unfinished projects, whether there's trip hazards on a deck, whether there's a missing deck railing. I mean, those are the things that every lender, whether it's a conventional appraisal, VA or FHA, is, you know, that's what they want to know. We, the appraiser is the eyes and ears in the field for the lender. And so they want to know if there's any potential health and safety issues there. That's the biggest one that we look for. Like I said, unfinished projects, whether you've got a kitchen that's in a state of disrepair and it's not a functional kitchen, or if you have a bath that's being remodeled, it's not a functional bathroom. I mean, that becomes problematic.
Yeah, people. I don't think people understand as much. Like, you see that actually a lot, and especially when we start to get into like a refinance kind of timing and boom, there's so many unfinished projects, it seems like someone's been remodeling their bath and they're getting refinanced, and guess what? That thing's not completed. Mm-hmm. It's an unfinished remodel. Like, you have to take that in consideration. Actually, something you see a lot too is like the railing not on stairs. You know, some of those older homes
just
and stuff.
That code like, things. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, doesn't have a railing on it. And, you know, some of those like older homes that got the basement downstairs, like, you got to have a railing on there and stuff like that. Or,
absolutely.
Here in the Pacific Northwest, I think this one's a big one. And you've heard me and Addie talk about this a lot, but water damage, water moisture. The BM word, you know, black mold. I don't like to say it a lot, but
it's common. It's a common thing. Right. Yeah. What, just to wrap together the process of evaluation. So a buyer gets into contract, the loan officer on our end, there is a step after we do some initial disclosures where we, on your behalf, will request an appraisal. I'm trying to streamline my explanation here. You have to actually pay for this outside of your closing costs. So it's important to know this, guys. Your closing costs, if done accurately and ethically, is which Carp and I always do, will include the best estimate of an appraisal within those closing costs. Now, you as the buyer actually have to pay for that separately. It is a third party ordering of service. So then the paid for out of closing reduces at the end figure. So it's included in your closing costs, but you pay it up front and then your closing costs reduce at the finishing line. So that's one piece that I review with people because it's expensive, guys. Like, what would you estimate right now?
Well, it's a good point too, because it's part of your closing costs, but it does have to be paid up front because this is a third party inspection.
Yeah.
And just like a home inspector, you pay that person when they inspect the home for your home inspection. Appraisal inspection is the same way. That third party appraiser needs to be paid when they come out to inspect that property.
But that's one of those dirty things that some of the lenders do. So you feel me getting hot.
Here we go. Here comes a bleep.
So you'll see loan officers who are quoting people and they're intentionally trimming up the closing costs to be more appealing because a lot of the consumers just go straight to rate, payment, and the check they have to write, which is, I'm pretending this is an invoice. So just go ahead.
No, that's what happens.
So they'll take the appraisal item and market what's called POC, paid outside of closing, and say it's $700-$900 and it's not calculating as a true cost, it's crediting. So then that bottom line looks cheaper. So if you're looking at lender A and B, you're like, well, this guy's $1,000 cheaper if I'm rounding up.
Yeah.
Not true.
Not true. Yeah, you are
so
paying for that cost. Absolutely.
It really rocks my boat when I see that.
Simmer. God. But when it comes to the cost, though, I mean, it is important because, again, this is something you're going to pay during that process. And it is, I mean, we typically see this anywhere from 7, 8, 9, $100,000. I mean, yep. It depends on the property. And mm-hmm. and then we'll let Craig kind of dive into that, because not every appraisal costs the same.
Yeah, there's a variable cost there depending on the loan product. Back to Craig, though. I want to hear it now. We, as the lender, request the appraisal. You are going to research comparable sales. You are going to visit the actual home itself. Now, how do we bundle all of that time and energy into one report that gets sent back to us as well as the buyer? Mm-hmm. How, what does that kind of stage three look like?
I typically will have my, I'll be armed with my comps and usually a few extra just to make sure.
Prior to going out.
Okay. I typically
got a couple in the chamber still.
Yeah. I typically try to drive those first before seeing the property. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work out. I drive all those because you're technically sort of required to do an exterior inspection of each comp, take a photo.
So mean drive, like drive by them?
Drive by them.
And physically see those things.
Gotcha. Yeah, spend a little time checking it out. And then I'll visit the property. We measure, we take notes, we come back to the office, and we put all that data into a report. And it can take 2 or 3 hours. So, you know, hopefully you can do it. I try to, my timeline is usually 4 to 5 hours total on each one.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, that's typically the process. And then it goes, you know, to whoever the lender is, they have their own checks and balances and portals that they use to upload.
Okay.
Some have, you know, little errors and omissions checks that they do for every report. And but by the time it gets to the underwriter, it should be pretty error free.
Gotcha.
As part of that.
On that, when you are going out to the home, you're also taking pictures, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And is that mainly just to be showing, hey, this is a 4-bed, 2-bath home, 2,800 square foot kind of.
I try to take a picture of every room.
Okay.
And include that in the report. That way, there's no resistance or revision request of, hey, why didn't you have a picture of bedroom 4? So I usually let, if it's a refinance appraisal, I'll let, you know, the sellers know that I need to be able to get into every room. Sometimes that can be tricky, particularly during the COVID years where there was kids at home and there was home, you know, Zooms happening, and it was really difficult. Yeah. During that
those
time.
Pictures of the bedrooms where you're like, is someone laying in the bed with the covers over them?
totally.
But yeah, 4 or 5 hours usually total. And depending on where it's at, I mean, if it's, you know, for instance, I'm on the VA panel, and if you sign up for Columbia County, you sign up for all of Columbia County, which can include Rainier or even further.
Some far.
So it really depends on, you know, drive time and that. But yeah.
Is any of that factored into the cost?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. Not so much on the VA panel. They only allow us to charge one particular fee no matter where you're headed.
Gotcha. Okay.
But if it's a FHA appraisal or if it's a conventional appraisal, and if it comes over with the standard fee, usually we can accept with conditions, which means, hey, I might need a little more time on this one given where it's at or how complex it'll be or how long it's going to take me to drive the comps. And, you know, we try to negotiate, you know, a reasonable fee that might require a bump.
Yeah.
Standard.
So if it was quoted at 700 or something, which is always an estimate on the lending side,
sure.
We're giving our best guess. We also have, you know, charts and stuff like that to go off of,
but
that's where you might see it come back in at, you know, 950.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So often when there's a purchase and we order an appraisal for a buyer, the value comes back within the report, almost to the exact amount of the negotiated sales price. Why is that?
Well, I mean, we're provided with the sales contract. You're not typically supposed to aim towards that number. You're
supposed
to pull the comps that would, like I said, compete for a similar buyer. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, bracket.
Yeah,
because that's what any good reviewer or underwriter wants to see.
Sure,
they want to see things bracketed.
Again being shown a low end,
a high end, something spot on if it's there,
right?
But you know, this is what somebody is willing to pay for this property.
It influences the decision a little.
It can,
not in a negative way.
But. I mean, it's tricky when you've got multiple offers, and maybe the offer that was accepted wasn't the highest sale price. It might have been the terms that it made it more attractive,
right?
Or what the seller needed in the way of rent back. So you know, it's a little more tricky when there's in a climate where there's multiple offers. But usually, I mean, it doesn't happen all the time. But usually, I mean, it's what somebody's willing to pay for this property, and hopefully, you know, the comps will support that. Doesn't always happen.
Yeah.
It doesn't always happen.
So this year, maybe in the last 18 months, you're seeing a lot of buyers and buyers agents have the ability, since demand is down, to negotiate the builder or the seller to contribute into what's called seller concessions or seller credits. This is money that they are going to give the buyer to either pay for all or some or a portion of the buyer's closing costs, reducing the overall cash investment on the asset. How do seller negotiated credits or concessions impact the appraisal report, if any?
Yeah, well, there's a section in the appraisal for, you know, we have to list what the seller concessions are.
Okay.
And it's even more common now because these concessions are increasing due to getting a rate buy down.
Yes.
And so I'm seeing bigger numbers there. Usually, and depending on the market conditions, but we are technically supposed to verify in every sale what concessions there have been.
Uh-huh.
And include that. So, you know, usually that's a line item deduction in the adjustment grid. So if you have a comparable that sold for $500,000, but there were $15,000 in seller concessions, that needs to be a deduction there.
Gotcha.
Now there's some school of thought that if seller concessions are common amongst every sale, then maybe that's the market and we shouldn't be deducting for that.
Okay.
So it's tricky. It's tricky based on where we are in the market and what's happening.
Yeah.
But very often, particularly right now, I've seen very few transactions that don't have a seller concession.
Yeah, that's what I was going to point out. Yeah.
Primarily due to, well, there's repairs. So very often, you know, with my realtor hat on, fix these repairs with a credit.
Absolutely.
You know, fix it with money.
Yeah.
Because usually the buyer wants to hire who they want to hire to do these repairs. So why not give them
a good point
versus having the seller hire who they want, and then it may not be, you know, it may not be who the buyer wants.
That's a good point. I'm going to remember that one.
To do that work. But right now, given where rates have been, I mean, it seems like probably 80% of the transactions I've looked at have seller concessions, and either in lieu of any repairs, but typically they're sizable now because they're participating in these rate buy downs.
So let's open up the repair thing, because I think it's important through this journey of explaining an appraisal.
Yeah.
When Craig or the appraiser completes the report and sends it back to Casey and I, we're looking for a couple things right off the jump. This report is long. It's detailed. What would you say? Anywhere between 40 and 80 pages?
It can be, depending on how many exhibits and pictures and other types of fluff get put into the appraisal.
You're probably 15 pages a minute.
You go right to the value and see if it's subject to.
He knows where we're at.
That's the first thing I do is double click that PDF and scroll down to like page 3 or 4. There's a little section. It shows that value and subject to or
as is.
Those are the two things you're looking for. As is means there's nothing. There's no other homework.
Good to go.
You're good to go. And if that value matches the agreed upon sales price, the lender on our end, we're good to proceed. There are no other homework or negotiations or anything. Now, the other flip side, it could be subject to. And subject to repairs is a list of items that the physical property needs attention and needs to be fixed prior to closing. This opens up.
And in order to justify that value given.
Yeah. Sometimes, sometimes it's if it's not health and safety, too. There's a whole other chapter to that book. Now, guys, this is important on the buyer and the seller side, because literally you can't close on the transaction until these are done and reinspect. So you're sending Craig back out there to verify that all of these items have actually been done, right? So this could put a closing issue for a lot of people.
Yeah, and it's also we charge to do that.
Yeah,
we charge to go back out. It could be anywhere from $100 to $200 to go verify that there's a carbon monoxide detector where it should be.
Yep.
It drives me nuts.
Hit us with the most common subject to.
Right now, I don't know why this is.
Listen up, agents.
It is
listen
right
up.
In the listing contract. When you take a listing, it says you will instruct or you will have the homeowner install up-to-date smoke and carbon monoxide detectors per Oregon code.
So which is
typically, you know, they need to be within 15 feet of each bedroom. That's sort of the rule of thumb. And it's also in the sales contract. It says right in there that once you have a sales contract negotiated and that those will be in there within 10 days. So there's two documents that float around there before the appraiser even gets there that says that these are going to be in here.
So many
now,
people miss
there
that.
Are some lenders that don't care. For instance, there's a local lender here that it's they don't mind if they're not there, which is mind-boggling to me because, I mean, it literally is a health and safety issue.
We mind. Aren't in there. We do care.
Oh, yeah.
Right. But, you know, sometimes we're able to accept photos back from the agent.
Right.
But, and then we can just revise the appraisal. But that's assuming that it's okay with the lender and the underwriter to do that.
It's still just another thing that selling agents are will be lazy. Like, literally go to Home Depot mm-hmm. and buy three or four of them and bring a little step ladder. And it's $100 one-hour activity that a selling agent should have done prior to an appraiser getting out there.
This is not anything new either, guys. Like, me and Addie have been doing this for a long time, and this every year. It's time. Always, I mean, we see that, like, I just had one probably last month.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. it's like, didn't have up-to-date carbon monoxide, you know.
So that's one. What's another?
That's one, water heater straps.
There it is.
The double strapping, you know, for earthquake. Preventative tipping over the water tank. I mean, it's
go so look at easy. Your water heater it's and so see if you've got straps. Yeah. They're like the little
aluminum circle mm-hmm. hold.
It
straps.
Reminds me of like an erector set thing.
You yeah, 100%. Like, guess where you can get them? When you're at Home Depot, grabbing your smoke detector, grab those too.
There's a lot of I know a couple agents who just keep those water heater strap kits in their trunk.
Yeah, you get a roll of it, dude. A couple screws, one. You're ready to go.
Big, and that's important. If there's an earthquake or a tipping of anything,
it's very important.
You've got boiling water in a giant tower.
Yeah,
assuming it's a traditional water.
Yeah, sure. There's tankless ones now, but that's a big one. Okay, so that's two easy. You know,
yeah, I mean, I think the other ones that we kind of tend
railing?
To look for is deck railings, porch railings. You know, like I've seen a lot of decks that don't have proper railings, and if there's enough of a gap where a small child could fall through, I mean, that's
probably like rotted wood on it too.
Oh, you know, for sure. Yeah, like dry rot or trip hazards, or you know.
Isn't a big one in some states, such as Arizona, Florida, aren't there some requirements to have fencing around pool?
Oh, good point.
That is a really interesting topic, and it's a moving
target. Okay.
And I think it really depends on the lender. It depends on what time of the year it is, whether the pool is full or whether it's covered.
Okay.
And then that will dictate, you know, whether there needs to be a fence around it.
Got
and
it.
I think every state is different.
Yeah.
And I've been sent out on both purchase and refinance appraisals when the pool is empty and not covered to verify that there's a fence there.
Yeah. You know, so. Yeah. That's another big one. So those are some examples of really easy things that you can do as a homeowner or a listing agent to prevent having a reinspect. Cause no one wants delays in times. No one wants an extra few, you know, $100, not only in the charge, but the cost.
Totally.
Which the buyer has to pay for. I mean, somebody has to pay for me to go back out, and it usually gets built back.
Yeah, it ain't
the
free.
Buyer.
It ain't free. Yeah. Well, and then the last two too, these aren't as common, but you definitely see these two things. Just tell us a little bit on how, when you're out there at that property and we're doing our appraisal inspection, what about a roof and then peeling paint? And the reason I bring those up, because there's a rare that we do see it, but these are things that come up and they do cause more reinspections.
Yeah, so with roofs, they don't like us appraisers to be roof experts, just like they don't like us to be foundation experts, whether it's a vertical crack or a horizontal crack. We all know kind of what's more risky.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with roofs, I mean, if you look at it and you can see signs of curling, see some shingles missing, I mean, you get a pretty clear indication of if that roof is at the end of its life. And if we're not entirely sure if it's got 3 years left, 5 years on it, there is a spot on the appraisal at the bottom near as is subject to that you can check the box to allow for a certified roofer to go take a peek.
There
and if they go take a peek and they say, hey, it's got 5 years or 3 years or whatever the lender may require, then we can, you know, alleviate that condition.
Carp, I think this might be a good time to open up the different loan products and the different appraisal processes.
Yeah, sure.
It is important for the listeners to know that you've got different appraisal requirements per loan product that you are using. And this is why backing up to before Craig gets reached out to or anything, this is why sellers take into account what loan product you are using when determining whether to accept the offer or not. Now, right now, demand is a little lower, so rarely are there multiple offers in a pinch, but 2020, 2021, it was a frenzy, right? So just to break down simplistically, there's a conventional mortgage.
Yes.
That's going to be the most commonly used loan product. Your second is going to be an FHA, Federal Housing Administration. The next one's going to be a VA, which stands for a veterans loan. You've heard us talk a lot about veterans. We love our veterans on this show. Absolutely. Third, not talked about a lot, a jumbo product, which exceeds the maximum allowed conforming loan limits, which were just increased again, I think, to like
766. It's like 766.
It's a ton. 750 plus. If you're going over that, I call them luxury loans to people.
Yeah.
You're borrowing more than $750,000, you're likely going to have a jumbo loan. So all of these different loan products have different requirements for the appraisal. Now, this is important, guys, because a lot of it will determine whether that report comes back that subject to or as is condition, which everyone's crossing their fingers for. So conventional usually has the loosest requirements in regards to the condition of the property, correct, Craig?
Right, or the scope of the appraisal.
Scope, that's sounds fancier. That's
usually more streamlined and straightforward. Yeah, but with the FHA and VA, there's other requirements.
Now let's dive into those.
The government backed.
This is a big one too, because there's a lot of listing agents out there that are very against, we call them Govy loans, FHA or VA, because they feel like it is impossible to get a clean appraisal, meaning, oh, if we accept this offer, then this is me talking to my clients who are selling their home and I'm the listing agent, right? Totally. You don't want to accept this, guys, because it's going to be a circus. We're going to get a full list of 350 things you're going to need to do in order to close on I do not advise you accepting this offer. Or they might not even check on the listing acceptable financing terms. You'll see that cash or conventional only right on Redfin and Zillow, folks. This pisses me off, because I will call listing agents to be like, what questions can I answer about VA or FHA loans, and hear them out. And some of the, it's just really bad hand-me-down advice not to accept a government loan. But Craig, hit us with the main differences specifically for FHA and VA. What's different in the evaluation process for the appraisal?
Yeah, so it's more about the inspection process on FHA and VA.
Okay.
The big items are, we are required to do a head and shoulders inspection of the attic and crawl space. So I typically
always, not a bad thing, guys. Always,
you know, we look down in there and take a few pictures and kind of check out what's going on there, if we see any real red flags.
Rodents or moisture.
Yeah, I mean,
right. Rodents, really, water.
Yeah, I mean, a vapor barrier.
Vapor barrier, terror.
All the way.
Insulation hanging down.
Mm-hmm. You know, that VA and FHA are a little more strict when it comes to peeling paint and shipping paint. So we keep an eye out for that. I try with the conventional appraisals to incorporate this, but usually the FHA and VA underwriters, they want measurements of decks and patios. So it takes take a little more time for that.
Good enough.
Making sure that, you know, any exterior amenities, you know, sheds and other outbuildings and barns and shops, those are all included with additional photos and measurements. Things that we would normally do in a conventional, but that's definitely something that they look for specifically in that. So it's a little more time on site. Mm-hmm. With the FHA and VA inspection process, but not much.
Yeah, I'd say like one example, and it was just like, baby, we had, I think it was an FHA loan. It was conditioned because one of the gutters was drooping down. It had dismantled itself on one end.
From the fascia board.
It was hanging. Once again, listing agents, get that fixed. Guys, it's super simple stuff. And I know I'm being dramatic with my you know, conversation with the listing agent and the role playing here. But once again, going back to the refinancing stuff, say you're in an FHA loan, you're in a VA loan, and you're going to refinance this, do those little things, guys. Go up and screw that freaking gutter.
Yeah, so put that thing right back in that fascia board. You're good to go.
Address the chipping paint.
Yeah, you can scrape it, repaint it. Yeah, I mean, the way I like to push it too is, you know, on those, I mean, it's really for the best interest of the buyer and also of that seller. Like, if all that does is that's opening your door right. for a whole nother avenue of potential buyers for your home. Like, why close it off?
And the way that I look at it, too, is the system for the these are government-backed loans, right? So they're party to their own evaluation process. Mm-hmm. And the entire intention is not to make them more difficult. It's to ensure the condition of the home being livable and not a money pit, if you just want to call what it is. So, like, one example, I've seen a bathroom called out for very apparent subflooring water damage. They walked in and you can see the laminate looks like a wave pool because you know, Sister Jan had the shower curtain on the outside of the tub it for 7 years.
It always goes on the inside, down. Guys. It goes on the inside
now
of the tub.
Now you got subflooring that's molding, right? If you're buying that home, here's the positive. If you're a buyer, you want that addressed. Yeah. Hey, fix that. Rip it up. Change that subflooring. Dry it out. Get a contractor in there. Do your due diligence, right?
Yeah, worst case scenario, you're pulling up the laminate. You're taking off the plywood down there. Try it out, new plywood, new lamp.
And that's one thing when I call these listing agents is like, well, let's start with self and or safety and health hazards. Do you feel like there's anything that would compromise you or I's safety or health? No. This is going to be great.
Right.
That's just where you start with the conversation.
Yeah.
Right?
No, we don't want to say that there aren't some homes out there that are rough shape that can only be a cash only or maybe a conventional. There are some homes out there that just will not fly for government loans. And we all
Let's
know.
Let's paint that picture.
We all know what those are. I mean, I drive past several of them on Skyline, you know, up in the woods and stuff like that. You can see those, you know, usually.
Total, yes, studs in ones where, like, it is just broken windows, everything, all the flooring's gone, the roof needs to be redone. That's where it does make it a challenge. Yeah. You cannot realistically execute on an FHA or a VA loan and get through that appraisal process it will get subject to, 100%. But they might not have the money or wanting to do all the repair.
And it might not even be able to be a conventional loan on it, right? But I think that curb appeal of it, you know, when you drive by a property like that, most of the time, I think if your mind goes to that, like, hey, you know, this is a distressed property.
There you go. Good word.
I was going to say fix and flip. Went distressed on it. Yeah.
Fancy word.
That, I think, can tell you right away, like, hey, probably financing isn't an option on this thing, or maybe only certain financing is.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking of other issues that come up with FHA and VA is that they're real sticklers on exposed exterior wood.
Oh.
So if you have unpainted siding or there was new window trim put in or, you know, if there's anything that's unpainted, they really prefer it to be called out.
Okay.
And it's tricky, particularly this time of year, where you call that out and you're like, well, I can't paint.
Yeah,
you know, it's when it's
pouring down rain.
Cold. It's tricky, and it's not the paint's not going to adhere, or you have somebody has to go out and put siding on this time of year. I mean, that's not exciting.
Yeah,
well, I think the reason I pointed out like the roof and the paint too, because those are honestly some of the biggest cost items too for a seller, buyer, something like that. Because you know a roof isn't cheap. You're dropping, you know, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 on a roof. And then you go to paint, you know, and you're looking at $5,000, maybe $10,000 on a paint job. Like, so those usually to me seem to be the ones that are pushed off farther, right? Because I mean, it's hard to kind of come into that money to do it for a property. But then it makes sense on the, you know, non-painted exposed wood, because how many people pressure wash those homes before they sell them? They want to, you know, make it look a little bit better. They're out there, they're shooting that pressure washer on there.
Yeah.
You get a little too deep, and that paint's gone.
Keep the pressure washer off the roof.
Oh my gosh.
You got to be careful. Some of those settings on the power washers are gripping and ripping. But it's important to know, guys, like, even on new construction, the evaluation process that the appraiser Craig has to go through does account for, say, landscaping and fencing. That's a big one for new builds, right? Like, fences aren't cheap, and that's factored into a lot of values for these new builds, and you cannot close until that process is done. So the landscaping has to get done, the fencing has to install. Now, fortunately, at our company, we can do some craftier what's called an escrow holdback, since it's not a safety issue.
Yeah.
However, not all lenders can do that.
No.
But that does factor in, and this does play into the biggest importance for buyers and sellers, and the most thing is closing on time. Right. So the more of these things you can get done, the more likely you are going to be able to get your closing date accomplished. It's really, really big. Let's hit the what happens if the value's low. This is a big one, guys. So going back to the 500K, Casey and I get the appraisal report back. We scroll down, open PDF. It's loading. We go down to page 3 or 4. We see the value. We're looking for 5, and it's like 495. Oh, this is not what we wanted to see, because Casey and I, this is how it impacts your loan. We cannot lend you more money than what it's valued at. We can't do it.
Even though your contract says 500. That appraised value is now what we have to go off for value.
Yeah. So we have to adjust that. You can only buy the home for $495, not $5, right? But the seller, the builder, is then sitting there and they're also disappointed, which we have to communicate this news, because now their asset and their profits have decreased $5,000. So this becomes a big red light in the process.
Yeah. And right? This is a light version. You know, sometimes you see that 10, 20, 30 grand low. Hopefully you don't. It could be a lot.
Especially you get to multi-million-dollar homes. Yes. You get some big cheddar.
It could be 100.
So let's let Craig talk into it, because Craig has a great perspective, not only with his experience with appraising, but also being a real estate agent. Yeah,
dual hat guy.
It's a big four-way stop for everyone. The lender, the buyer, the seller, and the appraiser at this point. So give us some insight on what are some options from the agent standpoint. Mm-hmm. And then let's talk more later on, but what happens now?
Well, from the agent side of things, you'd like to handle this between buyer and seller, particularly if it's a nominal amount of, say, $5,000. Like, okay, can we negotiate this? Or if there's, you know, a certain level of credits, can we adjust that for this gap from contract price to appraisal? I mean,
retouch on that really, really quick. So, because you're saying, hopefully we can handle this from buyer or seller. It's only $5,000.
Yeah,
so,
like, let's try to negotiate that and see if we can get both parties to agree.
Okay.
That would be the easiest step, at least in my eyes, before going back to the
appraisal. I keep re-hitting this bat, because coming to a new agreement would be a couple different scenarios. One would be the seller is like, okay, fine, we'll sell it to you for $5,000 less.
Sure.
Another one might be like, the seller's like, hell no.
I'm sticking at the $5,000.
No, you got to pay me that difference.
You agreed to pay this price.
Yep.
So you come to closing with the additional funds to satisfy that deficiency.
And the trend on that during the pandemic years, those pandy years, when it was an eBay environment, highest bidder, no conditions, was if there was any gap, the buyer would cut a fatty check for any difference. Mm-hmm. That has become near extinct at this point right now, but that was a big one.
Yeah.
People were writing $30,000 side checks to cover that difference.
Yeah. If the seller's holding strong, guys, that means you, as that buyer, you are paying that difference. And that isn't part of your down payment. That isn't part of, you know, the whole loan structure. Now, that's above and beyond, right? So
yeah, that's a big one for us.
Or if there's a sizable down payment, maybe you can restructure the down payment.
Yep. Take a little from the down
still
payment.
Be able to that's a great point. Have the same loan terms.
Yeah, maybe you go from, you know, 25% down to now you're at 22. Mm-hmm.
That term, guys, is called an appraisal gap. So if you're offering on a home and your agent is like, hey, I think we're in a competitive situation here, buyers.
Yeah, we are.
We need to do what's called an appraisal gap guarantee. That means that, well, if it undervalues, you know, we're going to cover the difference. Okay, yeah, let's do that. And it's not a big deal, guys, because we're just going to reduce the down payment. Well, that impacts your monthly payment. You might not have the cash to do it. It might be $5,000, like the story. It might be $50,000. We don't know. That is an appraisal gap is really important to know on the buy side.
Particularly, particularly during, you know, competitive, during those times of the pandemic where there were 10, 15, sometimes 20 offers on one home, and that price got driven way up above this price. Well, if I'm the listing agent and my seller is going to accept this offer that's significantly higher, then I'm going to want to make darn sure that I can get this buyer to satisfy any appraisal deficiency.
Yep.
And that it will get to closing.
Proof of funds.
It just takes one extra step out of that process.
It's not as common now, but I just had it 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. We did an appraisal gap guarantee. There are six offers on this West Elm Charmer that everyone was drooling over.
Gotta have it.
You know, and it got a little tangly.
Yeah. But I mean, you're being I think as a listing agent, you should listen up because that's proactive, right? Like if you're in that situation, you know, okay, we just took kind of the highest and best offer. Maybe that home won't come in at that value that we accepted. Let's proactively call that buyer's agent and the buyers and see if they have that coverage there to, you know, come up with a gap if it does come in low, right?
Totally.
Yeah, I mean, just recently I was the listing agent for a property on the lake in Lake Oswego. We had two offers off market and they were very competitive. And my sellers, the son and daughter of the gentleman that passed away, the offer prices were the same, the terms, except the buyer that won waived that appraisal deficiency.
Right.
You know, they had additional reserves to be able to satisfy that if it did occur.
If it did, yeah.
And it was a tricky property. It hadn't been updated. It was on the canal. I mean, there were limited comps. So, you know, the buyers that won because they ruled out any appraisal gap. They had the additional funds to satisfy that. But getting back to if we can't settle it between buyer and seller or from the loan terms or seller credits or any large down payment, if you go back to the appraiser, every lender and usually every AMC has a reconsideration of value process that you can go through.
Ding.
Yeah.
Good point. So yep, here we go.
That's what every appraiser loves to see come across their desk is, hey, we would like you to consider these other comps that maybe you didn't use or didn't see. Or maybe there was a couple transactions that occurred within the neighborhood that were off market or they were private and they didn't actually get input into RMLS. And so maybe those exist where you can factor that in and allow that to be additional ammunition to be like, oh, okay, well, I missed those. You know, we're not perfect. We don't sometimes know of other transactions that have happened in the neighborhood if they have happened privately and if they were arm's length. And so, you know, maybe those can be considered. Maybe an appraiser can factor in additional dialogue that the seller may provide in the way of updates or improvements.
Yep.
I mean, there's ways to navigate through it. It just seems like most of the time, most appraisers are very reluctant to change their number. There has to be something out there that was just either missed or there's a couple other comps that they weren't aware of that, you know, could help satisfy, you know, that gap.
And you know, guys, what Craig's saying there is so that appraisal value came in lower. We can go for a reconsideration, like a rebuttal. We can disagree with that value and we can try to support reasons why, meaning like off-market listings. Maybe there's some homes that just weren't on the RMLS that just weren't, you know, in the eyes of all of us. They were just private deals that went on. So maybe those can be taken into consideration. Maybe there is a comp that might have been missed or something by the appraiser. And that's basically, you know, gives us, you know, another option to just try to get that value at that, you know, agreed price if we can with supporting evidence. And I think that's a fantastic, you know, option. In all reality, though, most of the time the appraisers have done their job very diligently and it just, you know, maybe there just isn't enough evidence to support, you know, going up that extra $5,000 that's needed or whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
I've had it happen too where I have searched, maybe if it's a very similar neighborhood, where I've searched within school district because I like them all to be in the same school district. But if there was a comp that was just right outside of that elementary or high school district that I was searching in, it was just across the street, I may have missed it. You know, so sometimes, you know, it happens.
We're all human.
Yeah. I would say, too, just an off, totally different side nugget. If you're looking to sell your home and even you're working with a buyer, take note to how your agent justifies their opinion on what you should list a home for or what you should offer. Now, a really good identifying behavior of a solid representation or represented agent is one that shows comparable homes. They're like, hey, I'm seeing ABC within the most recent, similar square footage, similar school districts, blah, 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 blah. This is what I would suggest listing it for or offering on it. You see a lot of agents who are being interviewed to sell a home just agree with what the homeowner thinks their home is just to get the get the deal.
Buy in the listing.
We call that buy. Your home is really only worth 500, but Joseph Smith is like 570 I'd sell it for, and they're like, "Oh, great. Let's start with that."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then that property sits for a very, very, very long time, and it's just it's not a great journey to success because they'll end up price reducing. They'll get what they think is a lowball offer, which really is probably just a market value offer based on the buyer agent helping. So your opinion as a homeowner, and I do this at the same time. I think my house is worth more than it is. Every time, 100% of the time.
Most homeowners do.
You got to work with agents that are going to do that math and they're going to be honest with you and not just the person that's like, great, we'll try it your way, you know?
Yeah, and at the end of the day, guys, you're a homeowner. You're not in the real estate business. You're not a real estate professional.
Yeah, it's
you're
real not, estate. It's not Burger King.
Yeah, you can't have it your way. Yeah, you can't have it your way.
Nailed it.
You rule. But now there's one thing, too, I wanted to touch on before, you know, we move off of that is there is a third option, right? Yeah. So if, let's just say, the buyer doesn't have the funds to come up with, the sellers aren't willing to come down to that now valued price,
what do you do?
You guys might be able to just meet in the middle.
Right.
You know, maybe we agree to disagree, right? And it's like, hey, let's call it 97.5 and move on.
Right.
We each kind of do a $2,500 difference and call it a happy medium.
Whether we say the successful negotiation is when both parties give a little too much, or they think they've given a little too
when
much.
When both sides are not happy.
When both sides are...
Yeah, but it closes.
But it closes.
Totally.
Well, and on Addie's point too, like, you guys, you know, that agent's representing you and you want them to represent you in the best way, right? Yeah. And, you know, you might have a disagreement, but let's just say if that agent's just quick to say, okay, yeah, let's just go off of what you think the home value is and list, and then it doesn't sell, and you get an offer that you think now is a low ball. Now that's just animosity in the transaction, like, and you guys are kind of fighting through it the whole time. You want to be on the same team. Everybody wants to be on the same team. We're all in it together, listing, buyer, lender, and appraiser. Like, we all want it to... It's close and close on time. And
I sometimes wonder how these transactions get done with title, appraisal, loan officer, lender, underwriter. You know, there's so many parties involved, but magically it gets done.
Yeah.
You're really bringing
a lot of people together.
So we've got about two or three more questions. I know this is an extended app where we're definitely longer than we normally, but this is a special guest and this is a huge, there's so
it's
many.
It's a
good
unicorn.
Nuggets.
You never get to talk to an appraiser.
Yeah, this is rare. So we're going to keep it rolling. Bear with us. One, and I'm trying to work through this checklist I've got.
It's a great checklist.
Can I see what my home is worth even if I'm not selling? So could I get an appraisal to see what the value of my home is and what is that process
look like? Wait, Zillow's not always accurate? Like,
wow. Good point. Good point.
It's a great point. I mean, a lot of people think that that's the value. They really do. To us, because we've heard it so long, it's like an age. But yeah, that's not accurate.
Right. No. Right. I actually look because if it's a refinance appraisal, I want to know because I know the homeowners list.
That's what they think.
So I'll look and be like, oh, that's not right. Or, oh, you know, Zillow's not going to have any idea about the improvements and updates that they've done. But yeah, I mean, you can hire an appraiser privately to come out and appraise your property. But I always caution that appraisers tend to look in the rearview mirror a little more with comps that have sold 3 or 6 months in the past. In an fluctuating market condition, that might be a whole different value or number that a realtor is looking at, because they're obviously they're looking a little bit at comps, but they're also looking at the competitive supply.
Mm-mm.
And so with the realtor hat on, we're kind of looking here and forward, maybe a little bit, you know, in the past, whereas an appraiser, we're kind of pulling comps that have already transacted.
Yeah.
And if the market has shifted recently, some of those may not be relevant anymore. If you're in an increasing market,
And you've got, you know, in a situation where we had a few years ago, where you just put a sign in the yard and it's going to sell. Well, that number that a listing agent might give you is going to be way different than what an appraiser is going to give.
Yeah, especially like we saw 2020, 2021, like on that evaluation that they do, the appraiser's not taking into consideration, like, if a buyer's coming in and ask and offer another 50 grand on top of the, you know, the valued home price.
There's or not a the sales listed contract. Price.
Yeah, there's no sales contract. We're going off of what we think that value is currently, not what you could potentially get on that property for an offer.
I see that. Yeah, and that pertains to everyone waiting in the parking lot of soon to refinance. So you're, and a lot of people, we see this, not only people waiting to refinance, you see people accumulating debt, like consumer debt, and then they come and they're like, hey, I want to do a cash out refinance to pay off all this debt. Well, the valuation of the home is a huge anchor to what we can extract from the equity and pay off your debts. But if the value's not there, we can't go that route. So it's a big point not to use your home as a lifestyle piggy bank, because the value isn't just going to guarantee that you can pay off that $40,000 in credit card debt or whatever it might be.
Yeah,
right? And I often have seen, at least in my 9 years of doing this, the refinance values being lower than a purchase value, because you don't have, to Casey's point, that willing and able buyer that's put in a bid with a supporting purchase sales agreement. Craig, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I was just thinking as you were discussing that, like, well, in, you know, we've got a market, and if you bring an appraiser out to take a look at it, again, it could be a completely different number. But, you know, I always think of, okay, if I'm called and I'm competing for a listing, how am I going to get people through the door? Well, of course, I'm going to look at comps that have sold.
Right.
And I'm going to look at the competitive supply. But you're not going to get an offer until you get people through the door.
Right.
And so you have to be, particularly right now, you've got to be in a sweet spot.
Yeah.
You just do. And I just had this happen recently in North Portland, where I had a cute little bungalow house. You know, she took, been there a long time, taking great care of it. I thought I had the number nailed, the front number particularly.
Yeah.
And multiple showings, but no offers. And
wow.
I'm taking it off the market. And so right now is a really, it's dicey out
yeah.
there. It's really dicey. And so you really have to do your homework, I think, right now, because we've got a little more inventory than we've had in a while.
Right.
And usually when there's more inventory, buyers have options.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's what happened here on this one, is there were several other homes that were right in that same price point.
Yeah.
And maybe I was on a street that had too much car congestion, or that there was some neighbors that buyers weren't excited about the apartments across the street.
Yeah.
So there's lots of factors.
Or the weather might have been crappy when you first went on the market and it looked a certain way.
We've seen that movie Step Brothers.
Yeah.
When it comes to listing.
But totally. I was thinking about this house. Like, if I was appraising this house, I could get it there to that number that I listed for all day long.
Yeah.
But I can't quantify the impact of the parking and the apartments across the street and how close it was to the Shell station or Lombard.
Yeah.
You know, I can't quantify what that is as an appraiser, and there's no spot for that on the appraisal.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Yeah, super good point.
Solid.
Let's go to this question. I'm the only one that's checking this off, so looking down. How does a property receive what's called a property inspection waiver?
Ooh.
So kind of weird to ask that, since Craig also doesn't appraisals, but this does happen. There's a couple different things people call it. What I just did, property inspection waiver, or PIW, that's the acronym.
Yep.
In short, a lot of people call it an appraisal waiver.
Yes.
Some deceptive people who do our job would call it as like, we don't, I took care of it. I hear that.
That's wild.
You know, man. I like to call out the BS.
Yeah,
I know. People like, well,
a lot of BS
us,
in this industry.
You work with us, you know, we're probably not going to ask you to do an appraisal. I'm really close with the manager. I've literally heard people say this.
Craig. Yeah. Don't get misled.
Don't get misled on that end.
Because they are required unless they're not. And what we mean is just PIW, property inspection waiver, appraisal waiver, just means the property, the loan, the terms of it do not require actual physical appraisal to be done.
And to streamline that in further detail, so to give you a glimpse on the lender, our side, what we do, when there's an accepted offer, we then do what's called trigger the loan, where you enter in your file. This is me working on your file on my computer. I put in the address and I run what's called AUS, an automated underwriting system, right? And it's going to spit out with the address, and it's pulling from data on that address. Different general, what's the median sales price in the zip code? Are there recent comparables? It's looking at your credit and your down payment as a buyer, the mm-hmm. loan type. So the way you're most commonly going to see, and this is my opinion, well, actually, this is truthful. You will never get an appraisal waiver if your down payment is less than 20%. That just doesn't happen for starters.
Why
is that? You got to know that. It's an equity position.
Yes, it is.
So if you have less than 20% down payment, you actually have a mortgage, of which includes mortgage insurance. Mm-hmm. So that loan is insured. Insured loans cannot, they have to have an appraisal. That has to happen no matter what. Now, my theory on this like little algorithm that happens, because it's literally like AI stuff.
Yeah, that's
like
an algorithm.
Spitting this out, right? I think the home needs to be within range of the average median sales price for that zip code. So a lot of the times, if you type in 97203 and you see the median, you know, price of that home be $485, we'll use it. But you're purchasing a home at $599 and doing the 20% down, you might see an appraisal needed because the AI systems are like, this is a little more expensive than what we're seeing for the zip code.
Yep.
Now, that's not proven or whatever, but no. I see it most often. If it's in line with the average median sales price and you're putting 20% down or more, you will see that happen. You get that appraisal waiver, and it tells us and we tell you that it's okay.
Yeah, and since that just might be just an outlier, right? If the neighborhood's right. 500, but you're purchasing something 600 or more, that's on the higher end of that neighborhood. You know?
And higher down payment too. If you're on 50, 60, 70% down payment, the value, the bridge to cover from the agreed upon sales price to the amount you're borrowing is so widespread that we're good. You see that pop a lot. Yeah. Other things would be like a desktop review, so or a limited review. Craig, do you want to kind of chat about what that would be and how that's determined? Because we saw that in the pandemic a lot.
Right, right. And a lot of it had to do with property inspections.
You couldn't just go in.
You just couldn't go in. And, you know, it made things challenging. There were apps on phones that homeowners could use to film and take photos and provide them to the appraiser, which was
so wild.
Great.
Yeah.
And I know there's different appraisal products out there that, you know, sometimes they'll just ask for an exterior only, you know, depending on the terms of the loan and the down payment. There's actually one that's even less than that, where you essentially just drive out and verify that the property's there. And there's a little form you fill out and send it in. So there is different appraisal products based on the terms and, you know, the creditworthiness of the borrower and down payment and all that. And that's usually dictated by the lender.
Yeah. And I want to make it clear, too, because you get agents all the time. They're like, we're putting 20% down. So, you know, there's going to be no appraisal. Right. Mm. And it's like there's no way to guarantee upfront at all that there'll be no appraisal or an appraisal needed until you are in contract and we are running that loan through automated underwriting system. And at the end of the day, guys, I mean, if it's right in line with kind of that medium sales price and you're putting a healthy down payment down 20% or more, you got good credit, there could be a good chance, but there's no way to guarantee it until we run that loan and it tells us, you know, because that's an automated Fannie Mae system that'll tell us whether that's there or not. And then here's the catch on that. That's not guaranteed the entire way. If something were to change during that loan process, let's just say you change your down payment. Let's just say, you know, someone, your credit score changes. Something changes because we run that system multiple times during the loan process. That could kick that out. You could lose your appraisal waiver and need an appraisal.
Or if you went and bought a car while you were trying to buy a home or refinance.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because to pull back the curtain even further from what Casey's saying is technically you shouldn't know prior to offering on a home if you have the, because of what Casey's explaining. You physically have to go into the file and be like, we have a live deal. Now, there are people who do our job that will pretend. And they'll go in their system, they'll plug in, and they'll run it, and then they'll go tell, hey, Casey, I activated your file and I ran it. This won't need an appraisal. Now, they feel like they have an advantage because they can call the selling agent and be like, hey, I'm not going to need an appraisal. Now, to Casey's story, you can really screw yourself if you go that route, because through that whole closing process, you might have a retirement account or a brokerage, or to Craig's point, change your credit profile, which all the balances in your debt to income figures all change, and you might go from having one to not having one, or you used Crackit Mortgage and you have a really under-evaluated pre-qualification letter that doesn't have all the accurate numbers, right? There's an infinite ways that it could go sideways, but that's how people do kind of cheat the game, if you will. You really aren't supposed to trigger the file, because then you're manipulating the process and you're re-apping, and it's very frowned upon. And
yeah, someone's telling you that you got an appraisal waiver up front before you are in contract.
That's BS.
As the accepted buyer, then that means that lender has triggered that file. You know, I don't want to say illegally, but they have triggered it illegally. I mean, you need to have an accepted offer. Sorry.
Yeah.
Like, you can't trigger a file and make it a live loan if you don't even have an accepted offer.
Yeah.
Period. I think
another one of the biggest one, going back to the equity position thing and paying off debts, because we're going to see this a lot in the next 12 to 18 months. You know, see a lot of people trying to pay off this credit card debt with inflation.
Yeah, that's happening.
With a refinance. So one thing to know, most of the time when you refinance, you will need an appraisal. Now, in some instances, if you are not doing any equity extraction, meaning you're not trying to get cash back, you're just doing what's called a rate and a term. You want to lower the interest rate because rates have reduced, and you want to restart your term or correct the term, the amount of years you're paying it back, you do have some sort of a chance of not needing an appraisal. But bet your bottom dollar, 99% of the time when you're extracting equity, it's going to require another appraisal. And keep in mind, it's not worth as much as you think. It doesn't know you went to TJ Maxx and Costco and bought all those decorations and it looks cozy in your own anymore. Doesn't matter. Right? Yeah, so, sorry, I'm almost laughing at myself.
I mean, also, too, like, you know, like people, you know, there's different paints out there. Paints cost differently. At the end of the day,
different what?
Paint, like painting the home and stuff. Yeah, like, you got Bear, you got Magnolia Farms.
They don't know all that stuff.
They don't know any of that stuff. It just is a home painted.
It doesn't care that you, like, bought Electrolux appliances and or Samsung. It doesn't know that difference. Don't pad that in, folks.
Yeah.
Anyways. Yeah, I was gonna touch on one thing about, you know, appraisals and what dictates whether you need one or not. And during the pandemic, all the big banks, the big national banks around here, they would still require an appraisal, even if the home was, say, let's say the home was $2 million and they had $1.5 million in equity. Because the value of the home was over $1 million, they still required an appraisal. And it would drive homeowners nuts. Because here I am charging, you know, depending on the size of the home and where it's located, hundreds, sometimes thousands of dollars, and they're only borrowing $30,000 to extend their, you know, a bathroom or remodel a bonus room or something. Well, it was driving me nuts.
Yeah.
And like, why do you have to come do an appraisal of this? Because of your price point of your home.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point.
This has been good. I've got one final question for Craig. A couple, if we're talking about the future, moving forward with automation, AI, how do you feel like that's going to impact the appraisal process? Do you feel like there's still going to need to be a human factor moving forward?
I hope so. It's been my livelihood for a number of years.
We're in the same boat.
Yeah, us too.
But it will happen.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and lots of other lender organizations have tried to streamline the process. They were offering these bifurcated appraisals where the appraiser didn't actually have to go to the property, but they sent somebody else to provide the photos and the measurements and a sketch to limit the fee. I mean, it's always been a hot button for everyone, is how can we make this process faster and cheaper? And, you know, they've tried, and sometimes it works and sometimes it hasn't.
Yeah.
But during these bifurcated hybrid appraisals, whatever you want to call them, like over the last, I don't know, probably 5 or 6 years, they tried to implement this. I may have only seen one or two. And it's just, most appraisers feel like there's a whole lot of liability concerns there because they're not at the property seeing it and feeling it and smelling it and touching it and all that. So I hope not, but AI is here, and somebody's gonna develop something that's gonna make it streamlined.
We'll see. Yeah, and I think in the end too, to add to that, like, yeah, robots and technology can streamline a lot of processes, but to Craig's point, there are certain attributes that just require a human to see if there's dry rot, to see if there's any health or safety concerns inside a home, right? There's some things you just can't replace. And lastly, too, and this is something I said on a Zoom call recently. Someone asked me what I thought about my job being replaced. And I was like, well, it could be. But in the end, America's structured corporately to need to point the finger at a human being for liability. Because how are you going to sue ChatGPT?
Right.
How are you going to sue a drone?
Yeah.
So someone's got to be sued in America. Like, I'm not trying to be negative. That's how our country works.
Society,
yeah. For sure.
There needs to be, like, Craig, Casey, myself, all of these transactions have our signature on them and our license numbers on the agent side, absolutely, the lender side, the appraisal side. So when something happens, there's human beings who come into a courtroom and look to have resolution.
Somebody needs to be held accountable.
Exactly. And we're in corporate America over here too, guys. Like, what's the manager going to come down, scream at the AI guy?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
What are you doing, Johnny? Yeah,
Johnny.
I don't know. You're like, come on. It's
shutting down.
Overheat.
You know, yeah. But I mean, you know, we're already seeing it. Seeing it with appraisal waivers. You're seeing it with, you know, different kind of online lending and stuff. I mean, it's in the future. We'll see.
Yeah.
We're going to hold strong, though, for you.
It's a great episode. Probably the lengthiest one that we've had in the history of MLO, in a good way. I think it was super positive.
It's amazing.
If you made it this far, we want to thank
you.
Best
episode ever.
Craig's information will be in the show notes, too. So if you want to reach out, you're looking for a buyer agent, a seller agent, reach out to him, guys. Craig's one of the best, and we've worked with him for many, many years. So, Craig, thank you so much for being on the show today. It was an absolute pleasure. Right, Casey?
Thank you. Absolutely.
All right, everyone. So till next time, we will
catch you later.